Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hour 2, it is great to have you in. Grateful for patronizing our show. It's the Herd live in Los Angeles, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. They're brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs, the sub above.
It's Jersey Mike's Day.
What's that?
It's Jersey Mike's Day.
It is Jersey Mike's Day. So we're not sure how long this promotion goes, but we're really glad it's been created.
Never seen anyone inhale a sandwich so quickly. It was very impressive.
You know, that was a New Year's resolution about 7 New Years ago. Eat more slowly. And I just, I'm a fast eater. It's really a problem. Like, I eat too fast. I mean, I'm with people. I always finish first or second if 10 people eat. Like Goulet will tell you, if we have 10 people for a dinner, I'm first or second every time.
Why is that a bad thing?
I just think it's a little more refined instead of being a hog. Yeah, I just devour stuff. So.
Oh, you're hungry.
Yeah, but I eat like that every meal.
But you don't like get up and walk away when you're done eating. Like you sit there and like have a cocktail and like.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just a bad trait. But so when you see me eat like that, it's not an outlier. That's how I eat.
I never really see you eat because you're always grazing.
I'm a grazer. I don't think
I've ever seen you eat a meal.
I don't eat a lot of meals.
Yeah.
I do a lot of grazing.
Well, that sandwich didn't last long.
It didn't. So Philip Rivers retired from the NFL. And I said this last hour, this is an unbelievable quarterback opening. Matt Stafford, Carson Wentz, take pay cuts. Get there. This is what the Green Bay Packers coaching opening was 2 years ago. You don't get Aaron Rodgers. You don't get a good culture. You don't get a pretty good roster. Actually, a really good roster. You generally have to take over the Jags. Or you take over Cleveland or the Lions. So when the Packer job came open, Matt LaFleur, I mean, that's literally your first job out of college. Google. It doesn't work that way, right? You always work at a crappy company and work your way up to the best job, the Facebook or whatever it is. That's what this Colts job is. You got a great GM, very good coach, great O-line, star running back, excellent defense, well-run, and a winnable division. So it's a great job. So the question isn't, is it a good job? Could they get great quarterbacks? Yes. The question is, who do they want? So there's a lot of people that could be out there. They all come with baggage. Carson Wentz, really expensive, injuries. Jimmy Garoppolo, mistake prone, iffy judgment. Sam Darnold, can he play? Matt Stafford, 12 years in the league, zero signature wins. They all come with something. And except Darnold, they're all kind of expensive. What I would do if I was Chris Ballard, I would go for it. We have a trend in the AFC. Let's just talk about the AFC. And you've always got to consider what conference you're in, right? Got to win your division first. You're going to face your conference. And I would go for it. I would move up. Now, they're picking 21st, and you say, Colin, that's too far to go. But I want to give you some examples. Kansas City had the 27th pick. What did Kansas City do to get Patrick Mahomes? Got up to 10. Houston went from 25 to 12 to get Deshaun Watson. Baltimore had to move from the second round, 52, to get to 32 to get Lamar. And Josh Allen, they traded up from 21, made another trade, and then another, and got up to 7. So those are the teams you're going to be trying to get to the Super Bowl through, just in your conference. They all went big, rolled the dice, gave up a bunch of picks, and got Mahomes, Watson, Lamar, and Josh Allen. 4 for 4. 4 stars. 4 home runs. Say what you want about Lamar in the playoffs. He's a home run. That's a home run. You're winning 80% of your games with Lamar. That is an A. May not be an A+. That's Mahomes. But it's an A. That's what I would do if I was the Colts. And I think there's a team out there that is, it's pretty interesting. So if you look at the draft board, because if you're Chris Ballard, you don't want to make a move to move up the draft, get to like 6, and then 2 teams move ahead of you and get the quarterback. Look at the Dolphins at 3. So we know the Jags are taking a quarterback. We think the Jets could. That means Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence gone. They're still the kid out of BYU, Zach Wilson. There's still Mac Jones out of Alabama. There's still Trey Lance. I would call the Dolphins. Why? Because the Dolphins have already said they're sticking with Tua. That's what the GM and the coaches said. So they're sticking with Tua and Ryan Fitzpatrick. Number two is they're still rebuilding. They haven't made the playoffs yet. They want picks. They've done very well in the draft. They'll take picks. So if I'm the Colt, the question now is, Chris Ballard wants a quarterback. He's going to have to outbid potentially. Carolina could want a quarterback. We know New England does. 49ers may. What would you give up to secure the number three pick? Because you don't need the first pick or the second pick, frankly. There's a lot of good quarterbacks in this draft, unless you just love Justin Fields, and then you move up to two. But if you call the Dolphins, who are still rebuilding, they're going to stick with Tua, I think you give up several first-round picks. Remember, Chris Ballard has a history of not being paralyzed by having first-round picks. They gave up one for DeForest Buckner. It paid off great. I will tell you this, and I'm not sure if Chris Ballard has told me this, but I've been told this by several GMs in the league, that unless you have like a top 7-8 pick and you're guaranteed like a Trevor Lawrence, a Bosa, a Penei Sewell, you know, like there's always 7 or 8 guys in the draft, you're like, that's going to be great. And then you get another 7, 8 guys you know are going to be really good. But after about the 12th, 13th, 14th pick, you'd rather move to the second round because you're paying first-round prices and there's not a big gap from the 16th pick to the first three picks in the third round. There's really not a big gap. There's usually a handful of great players. Trevor Lawrence this year, Penei Sewell, those are just home runs. Those are once-in-a-lifetime players at their position. After that, if I said, that edge rusher from Miami Hurricanes, he didn't play well, would you be shocked? I mean, the third of the first round never materializes. So I would give up if I was Chris Ballard to get that quarterback if I wanted him. I'd easily give up 3 first-round picks. I don't even think it's – if you look at Jimmy Johnson created a chart, former Cowboy coach, Hall of Famer, Fox broadcaster. He created a trade chart years ago that's used today by many teams. To move up from 21 where the Colts are to 3 would take 3 first-round picks. And I would do it. Okay, Aaron Rodgers will host Tom Brady this weekend. So there were 2 games this year with Green Bay, and I said that either on Twitter or on this show, I thought Green Bay was guaranteed to win. Really strong feeling. First of all, week 7 against Houston. I went on Twitter and I said, this is the NFL bet of the year. Green Bay had just been humiliated by Brady and the Bucs in Tampa. And then they were going to Houston, a bad team getting worse. And I said, oh, they're going to roll them. This line at 4.5 is 10 point. Should be a 15-point spread. And they ended up leading 35-13. Texans scored late. I watched the game. It was not competitive. Now, the second game I felt like that was going to be more competitive. But I really said last week, the one game I bet last week is I like Green Bay over the Rams. Rams were beat up. Rams were using a starting quarterback they'd lost confidence in. Warm weather team in cold weather. I like Green Bay. I honestly feel this weekend almost as strongly. I really struggled to see how Tampa could win. There's 3 reasons why. First of all, the second year you get a new coach or a new system is the pop year for quarterbacks. Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers, the second year. Tom's in his first year, and they didn't play particularly well early. So this is not going to be the year Tom Brady gets to a Super Bowl, I believe. The second reason why, Aaron Rodgers had his worst quarter of his career the first time they played against Tampa and got blown out. He was 3-for-13, a pick 6, and almost another pick 6, a passer rating of 0 for 21 yards. I'm going to say he's not going to play like that ever again in his career. And the third thing is weather. Brady and Gronk are used to this. Rest of that roster. Ask yourself, give me 3 or 4 big wins by warm weather playoff teams going up to Lambeau or Foxborough. It just doesn't happen a lot. It just doesn't. So I really feel very strongly about Green Bay. And also, the only thing where I kind of feel like the reason I don't feel quite as strongly as I did against Green Bay Houston or Green Bay the Rams is that in the last 2 weeks, Tampa Bay's running game has sort of emerged against Washington and the Saints. It's actually been pretty effective. And if there was a way to keep Aaron off the field a little, I saw this happen when they faced the Colts, that you keep Aaron off the field, he kind of loses his timing. He sits and gets cold. He gets up, comes in three and out, and you look up in 9 minutes, you know, 8 of 9.5 minutes, you've had the football. I don't think that's going to happen. But this is one of these games where I'm having a hard time envisioning Tampa winning in Green Bay. Just don't see it happening. Coming up next, Peter King joins us. Still loaded, not even halfway home.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
The NFL playoffs continue Sunday with the NFC Championship presented by TurboTax Live as Tom Brady and the Buccaneers take on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Pre-game coverage starts at 1 p.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
With that, we bring on Football Morning in America, NBC Sports, Sports Writer of the Year multiple times, Hall of Fame voter since the early 90s. Peter King joins us on a Wednesday. You know, it's interesting. I said, Philip Rivers is one of those. He comes out the Eli year, the Big Ben year, and Philip. And it's fascinating to look that Philip Rivers has more touchdown passes, higher quarterback rating, more yards, has a better winning percentage than Eli. It's shocking to see how many numbers Philip has over Big Ben and Eli except rings. But as we know in life, what you're surrounded by, where you land in life, can dictate terms. I think I would vote Philip Rivers into the Hall of Fame. I mean, he literally had five head coaches. They fired one of them after he was 14-2. The franchise moved. I think I'd vote him into the Hall of Fame, Peter. I really do. When I thought about it coming in this morning, your thoughts?
I would agree with you, Colin. Look, I am one of 48 voters, and I don't know that I'll be a voter in 6 years when he comes up. But I guess my point, or in 5 years rather, my point is that I've always felt like, as in Hall of Fame voting and in Hall of Fame consideration, you know, we overrate winning Super Bowls. And I mean, that's just me. Other people think that that Super Bowls are one of the most important things you should consider when you consider Hall of Famer. To each his own. But I don't mark a guy down because he hasn't won a Super Bowl. I only mark guys up who have won Super Bowls.
Oh, I like that.
And look, Philip Rivers had some big wins in his career, and he never had the biggest win. We all know that. But I do think he did an awful lot for a long time. Plus, he played a playoff game in Foxborough without an ACL. I mean, you know, he's got something to him. You know, he's the son of a coach, and he's got the ethos of a son of a coach.
Deshaun Watson, I'm generally not for players demanding they want out, and he is yet to demand a trade. But I said this morning, the five highest graded quarterbacks, four are playing in conference championships. The other one's Deshaun Watson. They went 4-12. How bad do your surroundings have to be to go 4-12 with Deshaun Watson? I do get his frustration with his organization. How do you think it plays out?
You know, I don't know. I think I know somebody who interviewed with the Texans the other day who said that they said absolutely nothing about the storm clouds that are all around the organization. They said nothing about, you know, the troubles with Deshaun Watson. It was just a regular interview of a coach. So I think behind the scenes, it's one of those things that on the surface, Nick Caserio looks fine, everything's wonderful, but beneath the surface, he's like that duck, you know, is swimming madly, you know, to stay above the surface. I guess I would look at it this way, Colin. If I were the Houston Texans, what I would do is I would get permission from the NFL. I think he could get Nick Caserio and Cal McNair could get permission from the NFL. They certainly could get permission from Andy Reid to ask if they would allow Eric Bieniemy to have a one-hour phone conversation with Deshaun Watson. And, you know, if Eric Bieniemy and Deshaun Watson, if Watson said, I'll stay if they hire you as coach, then I think Houston has its answer.
Yeah.
Then Deshaun Watson stays, and they've got a guy who should have been hired as a coach a long time ago. They got one of the best coaches on the market, and they go forward with a top five NFL quarterback. I don't care what they get in trade. I don't care. They won't get value for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. It's like we've said this for years in the NBA. You never get value. You just cross your fingers that when you get draft picks to give up Shaq, one of them hits. Because you'll never, once you give away a star, you never get equal value. So we got a bunch of coaching hires. Some I don't like. Dan Campbell, Detroit, doesn't work for me. Some I don't know. Robert Sala. You know, I would say this. Maybe I don't know any of them. Arthur Smith, I think, could work, but I don't know. Is there one that you think, Peter, has the best chance to succeed of the new coaching hires?
Well, you know, all of them are going to places that are troubled, obviously. Dan Campbell is not going to be the sexy pick, and people are not going to like Dan Campbell, and I understand. But all I can say is he's a guy who studied and learned under Bill Parcells in Dallas. And he was already, he already had sort of the mentality of a Parcells type. When he was the interim coach in Miami, the first week he had the job, he ran the Oklahoma drill. And there was a fight at practice. He coached 12 games there and went 5-7. And a lot of people in the NFL have deep respect and think he's really, really good. Now, will he work? I don't know. Detroit needs a lot more than a tough football coach. But, you know, I also think, Colin, the Philadelphia thing is very interesting right now. As we sit here, I don't know who they're going to hire. I think they'll probably hire somebody by the end of the week. I don't know who they're going to hire, but I thought it was really, really interesting that on Sunday, has anybody else in this hiring process shown interest in Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator of the Patriots who backed out of the Colts coaching job 2 years ago? Nobody else showed any interest in Josh McDaniels. Look at what the Philadelphia Eagles have done, you know, under Jeffrey Lurie as owner. They hired who was Andy Reid? Nobody knew who he was. You know, they kind of shocked the world when they were able to hire Chip Kelly. Nobody saw that coming. They surprised people when they hired Doug Peterson. So my only thing is, the Philadelphia Eagles, particularly Jeffrey Lurie, does not hold his finger in the air to see which way the wind is blowing with his head coach. You know, they were with Josh McDaniels for a long time on Sunday. I don't know how many hours, but a long time. So, you know, who knows? Could they surprise people and hire McDaniels? Could they hire Joe Brady? Could they hire Dennis Allen, who I hear they're talking to today? I don't know. But the Eagles, I think, whoever they hire, it's going to be an upset special.
Yeah. So, I was, after that Kansas City win, I was thinking to myself, it's more impressive than we think. I don't think Green Bay could have beaten the Rams if Aaron Rodgers played on one foot for the first half and left with 7.5 to go in the third quarter. Kansas City, against a really good Cleveland team, a well-coached, excellent offensive line, powerful offense, Mahomes played hurt in the first half and didn't play for 75% of the second half, and they won. And I thought when the game was over, and the more I thought about it, I'm like, that's incredible. This was a really good Cleveland team. And as I watched Buffalo struggle to run the ball again, I thought, you know what? Kansas City's going to end up in the Super Bowl again. What were your thoughts about the Chad Henne call, the Mahomes injury, maybe the supposed concussion, your overall performance of a well-rested, off-a-bye Chiefs win over Cleveland?
Well, just remember one thing. They had a 19-3 lead
in
the third quarter. So it isn't like Chad Henne had to go toe-to-toe with Baker Mayfield and match touchdown for touchdown. He didn't. All he had to do was play well. He threw a really dumb pass for an interception in the end zone. But I'll tell you what was so interesting, okay? And everybody, you saw it, everybody saw it. Tony Romo saying, hey, they're not going to snap it. I didn't think they'd snap it either. It's fourth and a foot. I thought they would try to draw him offside. And then, you know, they would obviously, you know, just go on with this and punt or do whatever. But they weren't going to snap the ball right there. All right? So they snapped it. Colin, the reason they did that is because Saturday night at practice, or at in their team meeting, when Andy Reid asked everybody, including Eric Bieniemy, including Mike Kafka, the quarterback coach, including Mahomes, you know, including Chad Henne, are you comfortable with what we're going to do on fourth and short? And they all said yes. And during the game, Reid asked him again right before that play to Bieniemy, hey, you ready to roll? And Bieniemy knew exactly what he said, and he said, absolutely. That is Andy Reid knowing that he's got a veteran quarterback who he trusts to not throw the ball 10 feet over Tyreek Hill's head.
Yeah.
And he made the perfect throw. The game is over. That is when they knew, hey, look, if for some reason, and I think that probably Patrick Mahomes is playing, it's just my gut feeling, I have no inside information, but if he doesn't, I believe that Andy Reid and his coaching staff think that they can put out a game plan that they could beat the Buffalo Bills with Chad Henne. Now, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't, but they're confident in Chad Henne.
NBC Sports, Peter King, Football Morning in America. Peter, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Colin.
You bet. Yeah, I mean, the line would go from Kansas City favored by 3 with Mahomes to, I think, Buffalo favored by 3.5 with Henne. So it's a 6.5-point swing for Patrick Mahomes. It feels like he's worth more than that, doesn't it? I remember years ago, people said Aaron Rodgers was worth 10 or 11 points, but that's because his backup at the time, they didn't have a backup. Whereas Chad Henne can move the chains. You know, Chad Henne not only made that throw, he had the scramble. He also had a really good throw to Travis Kelce in the middle of the field. He put it in, squeezed it in there between two defenders. So it wasn't just that play.
He did his job.
No, yeah. I mean, he had a little Mariota in him, ran left, and he was a very capable backup.
That's what backups are supposed to do.
That's what they're supposed to do.
Not get crazy. We don't need him to win an AFC championship game.
Your most life-changing sleep is what's underneath. Go to Casper.com. Most refreshed feeling sleep in my life. Casper.com. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Well, the Deshaun Watson saga continues. His relationship with the Texans has been quickly deteriorating this offseason. He hasn't officially asked for a trade yet, but he did post a cryptic tweet yesterday saying, I've been trying to have some patience. I told my mama she should pray on it. It's actually a line from Codeine Crazy by Future.
Yeah, I read last yesterday. It was a lyric to something.
Yeah, Codeine Crazy by Future. It's it also might have a little tie to apparently some rumors that Jack Easterby, who's the Texans' executive VP of football operations, persuaded Cal McNair to pray for enlightenment. So,
oh gosh,
maybe there's a little tie there about, you know, praying for patience. there's a lot of prayers going up in Houston. And
interesting? Deshaun quoted a lyric from Future.
Oh, now we're really getting into it.
What?
Yeah.
You said it. What? No, I did, huh? Don't you think it?
I think the situation is a disaster, and I'm on Deshaun's side. I'm with you. I think sometimes trade situations can get a little messy and can be a little not unnecessary, because if somebody's truly unhappy, then they're not going to play to their fullest capability. But the Texans have been messing up for quite some time now. This is not a new thing. It's not dramatic at all. They fired their head coach, and then they made that head coach the GM and head coach at the same time.
He's been the life preserver for 4 or 5 years.
Yes.
And he's been able to get him into the playoffs. But I think over time, it just got worse and worse and worse. And in the end, this year was sort of the, okay, we need more. I need more boats.
Well, they also traded
sinking.
DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, that was...
Which
Big mistake.
It's a very big deal and a mistake. And it just seems like it's a very toxic situation.
Sometimes it's not just the player you lose, it's the relationship. Trading DeAndre Hopkins, even if you thought analytically it worked, that was Deshaun's guy. So you don't do that. I mean, there's literally Tom fought for Alex Guerrero, his trainer, to be on flights. Like, when you have star players, they get it. The late Kobe Bryant did this. You have certain people you work with. You have certain life habits. LeBron James has certain people that are important to be in his sphere.
Right.
Like, DeAndre Hopkins wasn't just a receiver. With a bad offensive line, he was his playmaker. He gave DeAndre, he was his hope. When the offensive line failed, he was my hope. And you traded that. You traded more than a guy. You traded a symbolic player. And when you traded him, you said you were kind of giving.
And what are you getting back? Like, that's, you're trading because you don't want to pay him.
Yeah.
But what are you going to get in the draft that is equivalent of that? Which is, like, I understand there's a salary cap. And what became of that? Like, on top of the fact that you're going to make Deshaun Watson unhappy, what did you get? How did you get better?
Yeah.
So what's happening in Houston is the result of bad management, poor decisions by the front office, and it's been this way for a while. It's not like Deshaun Watson just woke up one day and was like, I'd like to leave Houston. I personally feel like he's given all he has to the organization. Now, I also think that he's actually playing this the right way. He's upset, as he should be, and that's all he's said. He has not come out and asked for a trade yet.
Nope.
He's not openly demanded anything from the organization.
But he's had enough good stuff leaked that he knows, everybody knows he's pissed. It's okay for your managers to know you're upset. He hasn't made any threats.
Yes.
But he's leaked just enough, or his people have, to know, I'm really unhappy here. Russell Wilson did the exact same thing in Seattle. Suddenly, stories started popping out about New York and Russell Wilson.
Well, sometimes even if you don't necessarily have the leverage, like, he has to be traded in order to leave.
Yeah.
So maybe you don't have the leverage, but you have just enough power and influence that you can make things uncomfortable for the people that make decisions.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening, as it should be. And you don't want to squander Deshaun Watson's career. I'm about to talk about Philip Rivers. Deshaun Watson deserves an opportunity to have the pieces and the structure and the organization around him to be successful. Philip Rivers is calling it a career after 17 seasons. He announced he's going to retire from the NFL. Kind of felt like we saw this coming, even though we really didn't talk too much
about
this being his last season.
Better year than I predicted.
Yes. And he finished it. He finished the year actually in a more impressive fashion than I thought he would as well.
Beat Aaron Rodgers, had Josh Allen on the ropes. Philip played better. He absolutely has another year in him if he wanted to play.
Yes, but I think this is the right move.
Same.
In a statement released today, he thanked everyone who helped him live out his childhood dream of playing quarterback in the league, and he told the San Diego Union-Tribune that it's just time to step away. He is fifth all-time in completions, fifth in passing yards, fifth in passing touchdowns. He did make it to the AFC Championship game in 2007, lost to the Patriots. He's a 5-7 record in the playoffs. He has a job lined up to coach high school football in Alabama, so he's getting into coaching. Which, what's his word? Daggone, I can't say it. I don't have the country. Daggum it. I can't do it with his flair, but he does have that coaching streak in him. 8-time Pro Bowler. He's obviously a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
You know, every Hall of Famer, every all-time great does not necessarily win a ring.
I like how Peter King said it. I'll give you credit for winning them. I won't deduct points for not winning them because you need support. So if you win a Super Bowl, John Elway, you get credit, but I'm not going to ding Dan Marino for not winning them. And I think that's, fans get so caught up on that, and my takeaway is, ask every fan out there, if your parents were oil barons, would you be richer today?
Yes.
Meaning, what you grow up with, or where you land, or your support system, overwhelmingly will either deteriorate or elevate your opportunity in life. You would admit, if you're out there watching me, and you have a good solid job making 58 grand a year, If you grew up overseas and you were part of the royal family in the UK, or your family was in oil in Saudi Arabia, you would probably be wealthier today. Why? Because of what you're surrounded by. And so Philip Rivers was surrounded by a lot of chaos. And so therefore, he still beats Eli and Ben in a multitude of stats.
He's definitely had the stats and the years. He's been productive. But I also think it's important to say it's very difficult to win championships. That's why it's a big deal. Sometimes we get a little too desensitized, and probably because of Tom Brady and the Patriots going as many times and him winning as much as he has in the past 20 years, that we just like expect people to win Super Bowls. It's very, very hard to do that. Look at the Philadelphia Eagles.
Look at Brett Favre. One.
Aaron Rodgers only has one.
Yeah.
Drew Brees, who we don't know if is going to retire, we're assuming is, definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer, only has one. It's a very, very hard thing to do.
Yeah.
So don't forget that as well. So Cowboys offensive coordinator Kellen Moore has emerged as a head coaching candidate for the Eagles.
Boy, he's young.
The team reportedly interviewed him yesterday. He's been a member of the Cowboys coaching staff since 2018 and recently agreed to a 3-year extension to remain their offensive coordinator.
Wow. How old is he? 34?
Kellen Moore.
I saw Gerard Mayo yesterday, former player.
He's 32.
Man. Well, this is what's happening everywhere. People are running companies now at 23. So it's Gerard Mayo's up for... Gerard Mayo is getting a lot of talk that he's about a year away from getting a job. I swear to God, he was a linebacker 3 years ago.
I don't mind them hiring young coaches. I think that the success of a young coach is based largely on who you hire as your support staff, what kind of assistants and coordinators you put around you.
And I'll say this as a dad, is that our kids are just smarter today. Coaches are more, it's everything. It's technology.
You start earlier, you have more access to information.
It's like quarterbacks. If Drew Bledsoe's on next hour. Drew Bledsoe's like, I played like 8 high school football games a year. That was it. And then you played basketball.
Yeah, they weren't going to camps.
No, like it's
private trainers.
Yeah, you just quarterback. That's why I'm tougher on Tua than I would have been 8 years ago. It's like I got 9 games of Tua. I don't see the secret sauce. I would have never said that 10 years ago. You just like, you got to give a guy, I remember saying on the air, you got to give a guy like a year and a half. You got to give him 20 games. Now you don't.
Well, when it comes to the Eagles, I don't really know that there is a hire that's going to floor me at this point, because it sounds like what's going on internally is extremely dysfunctional, and I don't love the reports about Wentz not wanting to be coached.
By the way, Kellen Moore is a Cowboy homer, Goulet. Are you a Kellen Moore fan as a play caller?
Yeah, he runs their entire offense and has for a couple of years, so I like him a lot.
So you like him?
Yeah, I like him. I don't want the Eagles to take him, for sure.
The Cowboys' offense was 3rd in points per game and 1st in yards per game before Dak got hurt, and they finished the season 17th in points per game and 14th in yards per game with backup.
That's pretty good. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
All right. Well, I can't believe, isn't that crazy? Pro Football Focus doesn't like my Tommy Brady.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Go the extra mile in your very own upfitted Mercedes-Benz Sprinter van. You could win it. January 24th is the deadline. Go to foxsportsradio.com. Sign up for Fox Sports Radio's Ultimate Tailgate Rig Sweepstakes. These are amazing van, 6 TVs, swivel chairs, grills, blah, blah, blah. It's all good. So Pro Football Focus, they grade every snap, every play, every year from all the players. They have ranked Brady's season as the 12th best of his career. And I laughed this morning as I was talking to Nick Wright earlier about this, is that, you know, my kids should get good grades. My kids, you know, have a safe home and stability, and I could pay for a tutor if they needed it. And some kids just don't have that opportunity. And they have instability at home, and, you know, they're going through some chaotic times. And, you know, it's just there's people going through much tougher situations. And I look at this Brady year, and I honestly think if he beats Green Bay, it's probably his first or second best year as a pro. I'm dead serious. He basically has an old school coach that's not Hall of Fame, no OTAs or camp. O-line was the weakness of the team. 2 Hall of Fame quarterbacks in his division. Brees will make it. Matt Ryan, a couple more good years, probably does. And he drove to the facility this year in a COVID year, not really knowing the system, the playbook, the streets. For God's sakes, he actually entered somebody else's home before the season started. He was lost. He didn't even know his city streets. In New England, he drove to work, best coach, best offensive line coach, top 10 defense, excellent ownership in a bad division where he never faced other Pro Bowl quarterbacks. So to me, on the grading scale, one of the things that drive – it doesn't drive me nuts, but I guess one of the things that I'm most impressed with is when I see somebody – I try to do this – and I see they're an older American, a man or a woman, and they just look great. They've just aged well. And those people always have one thing in common. They adapt. People that adapt and evolve just age better. They eat better. They stay current to trends. They don't look outdated. They're just a little hipper, a little smarter, a little more curious, less rigid. If you look at the first 9 games this year for Brady, and you look at how he adapted, it's kind of remarkable. In his first 9 games, 20 touchdowns, 7 picks, 266 yards a game, 96 passer rating. In his last 9, 24 TDs, 5 picks, 312 yards a game, 107 passer rating. They got Antonio Brown moved in. They lost a tight end early. They developed more of a running game. I mean, he really adapted through the course of the season. He had like 2 seasons. He had a good one. He had a Matt Ryan year, and then he had an Aaron Rodgers year in the last 9. And that's simply Tom willing to adjust and adapt. And I think it to me, if they can beat Green Bay Sunday, and I don't see it happening, on the scale of grading, it is really, to me, as impressive. He didn't win Super Bowls in those Randy Moss years. It's as impressive as any year. Because remember, early in his career, they were winning Super Bowls, and Tom was more manager than superstar. They had great defenses. Then there was a decade he didn't win Super Bowls. Then he came back and he won Super Bowls. Belichick was a better coach at the end. He'd been around longer. The division was worse than when he first got there. The defenses and the offensive line were better often in the last 4 or 5 years. So Nick Wright, who doesn't lose a lot of love for Brady when he struggles, acknowledged that this has been really a remarkable year for Brady, one of his best.
But I'm watching the other old quarterbacks just evaporate around him. Rivers just retired. Big Ben, I think, just threw another interception. Drew Brees just threw another interception. The Manning brothers have been gone for years, and Brady's still there. He's like Jason. He won't die. And it's so frustrating. And so, yeah, if he goes into Lambeau to beat Rodgers and makes his 10th Super Bowl, then it'll be one of his most impressive seasons.
You know, interesting with Brady, think about this, Joy. Remember when Peyton Manning was a free agent and he chose Denver? And John Elway taught, he trusted John Elway, another legend they had at the time. Demaryius Thomas, Eric Decker, they had good receivers. They had a pretty good offensive line. I wonder if when Brady sat down and looked at this, obviously he wouldn't know Justin Herbert was going to be this good.
Right.
But did he look at some of these AFC quarterbacks in August or when he made the decision in March, and did he look at them and think, you know, that is going to be way tougher in the AFC? Because when he goes to the NFC, he looks at that division and goes, well, Drew Brees is about ready to retire. I've beaten Matt Ryan in the Super Bowl, and Carolina's rebuilding. And I do wonder, because Brady made that decision in March. Tom thinks of everything, right?
Yeah, I'm sure he looked at the entire scenario start to finish.
And he looked at it and he thought, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, and then a lot of young average quarterbacks. And in that division,
I think the weather played a role too, honestly.
What's that?
I think the weather played a role too.
And the weapons they had, the wide receiving weapons. Yeah. But, I mean, it'd be interesting if you sat down with Tom 20 years from now when he's gone and say, okay, what did you really consider? What did you really consider? We know the weapons because we know he was frustrated in New England with lack of arsenal. So we know that was part of it. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, we know that. Was it O.J. Howard, Cameron Brate? We know that was part of it. We also know that Bruce Arians had a history. He was an offensive coach. Belichick was defense. That was part of it. Maybe weather was a big... I remember hearing, because we broke the story, I remember hearing Miami first.
Yeah.
So, and I heard, this is before it broke, you and I were speculating. The day before I was told he was going to Tampa, my source said, it's Miami or Tampa. Because Giselle... Miami's a very international city, and Giselle was like, I'd move to Miami,
when
and he
you
goes.
Have to stay in the winter.
And I think Tom said, "Okay, I'll give you Florida. Give me Tampa because I don't want to rebuild in Miami." But I heard Miami was the other one. Hour 3 coming up. It's the Herd.